7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Croc Podcast. This is a podcast for the greatest human beings on earth, our cancer survivors. It is a podcast of hope. It is a podcast of emotional support. It is a podcast of inspiration. My name is Dr. Tommy Anelli, and I will be helping you on your journey along with Angel Santana from Have Faith, Let It Begin. Angel, how are you, my friend? I understand you've been running ragged.
Yes. What is that expression, burning both ends of the candle? Is that how it goes?
Burning the candle at both ends. But, you know, you're doing your young fatherhood thing, taking care of two sick kids. And you know what? The survivors appreciate you for being here and getting this podcast out to them.
Definitely. And shout outs to everybody out there that's dealing with sick children. It is the flu season and so much going out there. So thoughts and prayers for everybody as well.
Absolutely. So we have an interesting podcast today. It's about your caregivers. It's about your doctors specifically. And I had something that happened this week from a patient, had one of those horrible stories that I will share. And the name of this podcast is Doctor, Did You Do Your Homework? So Angel, as you know, in order to get a medical degree, there are decades of classes to attend. There are libraries of knowledge to learn, countless grueling days and sleepless nights learning our craft. And then and only then do you get the honor to be called doctor and the privilege to care for patients. But does the homework stop after you graduate, or is it a lifelong commitment? And Angel, you know the answer.
Oh, God, please. It does not stop. It just keeps going and going. It's like the Energizer Bunny.
Yep. So there's the obvious commitment and then the not so obvious commitment. And we're going to go through both of them. And then we'll talk about the story of our patient from this week. So the obvious commitment is staying, you know, up to date on the newest and latest and greatest things that are going on in the cancer community, in the management of our cancer patients. So there's the academic component, doing your continuing medical education, looking at your work and evaluating it, doing what's called an outcome analysis to make sure that your outcomes are at on par with the rest of the nation. Then we're taught a certain group of skills, both in our schooling and then in our residencies. But those skills and techniques, although, you know, just on the vanguard when we graduate, even maybe for the first 5 or 7 years, then they start to change and they modify. When I first started, mastectomies were the big procedure. Now it's lumpectomies, and there was no such thing as robotic techniques where minimally invasive surgeries. There was no such thing as stents for cardiac stents. Now there are. So those skills, the doctors that are required to do those skills, they may have not been trained in those skills. So they have to have the obligation to learn new techniques as they become available. Same in my field in radiation oncology, different treatment planning computers and, you know, artificial intelligence and all those types of things, in addition to the journals and things like that. You also have an obligation for leadership. You have to develop an administrative side. You have to be the quality officer and the safety officer. Many of the things we do are very toxic. So whether it be the surgery, the chemotherapy, or the radiation, you know, bad things can happen if you make a mistake. So you can't make a mistake. So in order to do that, the reason why planes aren't falling out of the sky every day is because they have a very, very fastidious, at times, you know, very frustrating, but fastidious process of making sure that they don't put an airplane up in the air unless things are absolutely perfect. And then we have one last obvious commitment, and that's to be an innovator. So as we get more seasoned in our work, as I'm becoming in my career, one of the elder statesmen of the radiation oncology community, and many of these young doctors coming out are the age of my children, you know, I have a commitment, since I have all that experience, is to use that experience to help be innovative in our programs. Sometimes our programs are in big academic hospitals, sometimes they're in small community hospitals or somewhere in between. Sometimes they're freestanding centers, sometimes they're just big mega groups like Crystal Run Healthcare or whatever. No matter what the setting, those are commitments that are obvious. And then there are the commitments to our patients as far as doing our homework that are not as obvious. So I had a patient, we'll call him Jose. So Jose had two problems going on, anal cancer as well as what appeared to be a kidney cancer simultaneously. The kidney cancer did not seem very problematic. And we got him all set up with his anal cancer treatments where we were going to set him up for treatments for radiation and chemotherapy for cure. We sent him into New York City. I won't mention the hospital, but a big tertiary care center. And he saw one of the big academic urologists who looked at the record and said, "Don't worry about this, Jose, everything is good. You go take care of your anal cancer and we'll take care of the kidney thing later. We'll probably do just, we won't even have to take out your whole kidney. We'll just have to take out a part of it." So we went on with our toxic treatment and got him really sick. But at the end of the day, he was cured and he was doing very well. This all happened in August. Wow. And now 5 months later, he goes back to the urologist in the city, all ready to have his surgery this coming Monday. And the surgeon tells him, Jose, I showed the films from August to our radiologists, and they feel that this kidney cancer is more extensive than we originally thought. And we may have to do a complete nephrectomy. And your stage has changed, and now your life expectancy has been reduced significantly. So how would you like to hear that? Like 5 months later.
Yeah, you almost feel like, pardon the pun, but I mean, talk about taking two steps back after you feel like you've taken five steps forward.
And what happened, and I'm speculating, but I think I'm in good authority to do that. I don't think that guy ever looked at this guy's films, which he should have done in August. Yeah. I think he only looked at the films a couple of days before the surgery. And all of this information was available. It's not like something changed. It's not like he had a film in August. Mm. And now he repeated the film before going into surgery and things have changed. Right. This was the same information. He was just talking out of his, you know what, Angel, just because he just didn't feel like looking at the films or have his radiologist look at the films.
And pardon me for saying so, and I didn't mean to interrupt you, Dr. E, but I was going to start off by saying, did the guy even look at the films? But I didn't feel like I was right to ask. But in my inner, inside of me, that was my first reaction. Like, wait a minute, did he even look at the films?
Absolutely. And actually, that's one of my criticisms. I think that, and I just want the caregivers to know that when we do these types of podcasts where we're looking at some of the deficiencies from our end of the ball, I put myself first and foremost at one of the people that I'm yelling at, because I'm not perfect. And I have, done things just as, egregious, forgetting to look at a film or whatever, giving person the wrong information, because I wasn't as prepared as I should have been. So I just want to start by saying that. But at the end of the day, I go in at 5 o'clock in the morning. I look at all the charts of the people I'm going to see for that day. I look at the films. I see what records are missing and what records I need, and try to be as prepared as possible. The other thing that I think is going by the wayside, which is unfortunate because we're very highly technological these days, is the physical examination. I think a lot of doctors don't do a full physical examination. They're very, I don't want to use the word lazy because it's the wrong word, but maybe overworked, too busy, to do those things. And you really can't cut corners. You're talking about somebody's lives. We have this huge responsibility. Our words and our opinions are really, regarded. And we should be very thankful for that regard, because that's why we got into this business to begin with. Things like staging and prognosis, the exact procedure and plan that needs to be given to the patient very clearly. and they need to be mentally prepared. So we graduate and we finish our residency and we work hard and we try to balance our lives and do fun things and, participate in the world. But if at any time that balance interferes with the care of our patients, then we have to be a little off balance, at least during our career, because this is not working at Taco Bell. No offense to anybody working at Taco Bell, but this is just something that's more than a job. It's really a vocation. It's like as holy as the priesthood, and it's very special. And I've always said that. And I think that, when young people come to me and they're telling me, not that they've asked me, but I might meet young people, nieces and nephews or friends, kids and things. And, hey, I was thinking about being a doctor, but, I don't know. I just don't want to give up this part of my life or whatever. And I don't want to, have all that responsibility. I say, good for you. You recognize that. It's better to recognize it before you do it than to do it and then be, oh my God, this is way more than I signed up for, because we do have that responsibility. And I have to be fair to our caregivers. I have had very transparent and very specific talks with people, and many times it's not on us. Many times we have told them, hey, you're not gonna, we're gonna try for that partial nephrectomy, but very more than likely it's going to be a full nephrectomy. And then, they might remember partial nephrectomy. You never told me that you're going to take out the whole kidney. And, many times it's not on us. But in the case of Jose, that is completely preventable and absolutely on us. Angel?
It's just amazing to me because, as a patient, I can honestly say this has happened to me. And it's hard. It's hard because we could sit here, and I commend you, Dr. E, for not, taking the sour end of it, so to speak. Meaning, you could have sat here and just pointed the finger in the opposite direction, and you looked at it and said, listen, I've been there, I've done my mistakes. But as the patient, I can't tell you how disappointing it really is, because you put your trust and faith in that person. Now, mind you, I'm aware that there are people out there that have things like, oh, being overwhelmed. I understand that. But at the same token, if I may, you are putting your trust into that person. So for that to happen, my thoughts and prayers for those people that have to experience that. And hopefully, by doing this episode, it'll allow these doctors and nurse practitioners and all people of the of every any type of medical or non-medical to know the expression that I live by. When you make a mistake, you have to own it. And if you own it, you'll gain more respect by your peers and by your patients because of the fact that you have humbled yourself to the point where they know you're human too.
Yeah, and I think that as we try, if anybody is new to the podcast, we don't just try to point out shortcomings in the system. We also try to come up with some solutions. And I think one of the solutions, and we always try to teach our survivors to be not only, to be self-advocating, meaning that you hope that you'll have a medical team that will advocate for you, but also it's important for you guys to advocate for yourself. So, a take-home message would be when you go for these second opinions or you go into the city, and you someone says, okay, you're going to do great. I think we'll be able to do a partial nephrectomy, and you go take care of your other issue, and you come back when you're done, and we'll take care of this. I think that it's important, and one of the take-home messages would be, doctor, thank you. That really makes me feel good. What are you basing that on? Have you seen my films? Do you have all of the records that you need in order to tell me what's going on? I would want to know everything now. I don't want any surprises. I don't want to be rabbit punched at the 11th hour. I don't want to come back and see you whenever. You tell me what needs to be done. Do I need to do an ex another X-ray before the surgery? Do I need for you to examine me? Do we have to do a scope before the surgery? What is it that, that I can do to help you and make sure that you give me the proper information? I also want you guys to take notes. I want you to have a little patient, a book where you keep all of your data, you keep all of your records, you have a copy of each of your discs for each of the x-rays and you keep them with you. And if a doctor says, oh, give me that book, I need it for my record, you say, doctor, you may make a copy of this, but this book stays with me. That's like the football. That is the absolute, that is your whole, that is your Bible. That is your medical record. You keep a copy of that. And, you know, be inquisitive, even if you feel you're being obnoxious or you feel, you know, because a lot of the doctors that don't have time for you to ask questions or maybe make you feel badly that your questions are not to their, you know, because they're so important or whatever, not to their level, or, you know, or they feel they are off put by having to repeat themselves. Those are not the right doctors. You know, you need to go to somebody who's going to take the time and look at you face to face. We say this on the podcast all the time. They're going to be at your level. They're not going to be, you know, 1 foot in the door, 1 foot out of the door. Make sure they know something about you. Make sure they remember you. And these are all the things that you can do to advocate for yourself, to make sure that your doctor does his homework. And I can't tell you how many times, even with me, maybe because I don't have all the records that I thought I had or whatever, how many times a patient will then cue me in and I'll say, wow, yeah, I didn't know that. Let's dig into this a little deeper. I thought it was a very straightforward case. And it wasn't. So, you know, keep doing that, everybody. Please advocate for yourself. Angel, last words.
I think we touched on a huge part for the patients today. And I think that it allows us to also understand that doctors are human too. In addition, it's empowering us to know that they do not work. We do not work for them. They work for us. And it's a two-way street. Communication is key. And I think that I got a lot out of this today, and I hope that others will do the same.
Yeah. Actually, just to kind of throw a little cherry on top, another patient, will call her Gloria, actually caught the biggest cancer hospital in the world with a huge mistake. And, you know, it was only because of her incredible, I'm going to say, pit bullishness, because I'm a dog guy, but, you know, just her real tenacity. And boy, I'll tell you, when she gets into it, it's like you're there for an hour. So, you know, you better just, you know, just make you resign yourself. You're going to be an hour with Gloria. But I'll tell you, that pit bull, she was right and they were wrong, and God bless her. And she's a great example. And had Jose been like Gloria, then he wouldn't be like right now. It's Sunday, right? So surgery is tomorrow. He's probably, you know, I don't want to use the expression pooping in his pants, but I bet you he's as close as possible to that. And I will pray for Jose tonight that he gets a good night's sleep and everything goes well for him. Angel, thank you for everything. As always, have faith, let it begin. Rod Freeman, Small Biz Up, for everything, for all your needs. If you have a small business, you want to start a website, you want to start blogging or journaling your journey, he would be a good guy to talk to. He's not interested in money. He's interested in your journey. Michael John Benzea, Charlotte Larson, thank you for your support. Of course, our board of directors who try to guide us, and they are very wise, far wiser than you or I put together there, Angel. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, without a doubt. Come on now.
Yeah. And to our survivors, this is your pep talk. This is Newt Rockne speaking, channeling through me. You know, you guys have a lot on your plate and you expect your doctors to know what they're doing. And you put a lot of trust into us. And we have a huge responsibility. And anytime that we lose sight of that responsibility and we don't go above and beyond for you and break down brick walls for you and know everything about you, including your favorite color and your favorite food, and God forbid that we miss something or we don't do your look at your x-rays, we just read a report. God forbid we don't examine you fully or know everything about your case. God forbid that we haven't spoken to your other doctors to make sure everybody is on the same page, that the right hand knows what the left hand is doing. You are not bothering us. You are not causing a scene. You are not being a, you know, a pain in the butt. You are being absolutely righteous in what you expect from us. That's the least we can do. You're going through enough. You're going through cancer. It's a very scary journey. It's a very scary disease. And we know that you can be cured. And we absolutely support you. We love you. And we are your advocates here in the CROC podcast. And every week we try to bring you information, emotional support, and inspiration. And we want to end this podcast as we end each podcast, wishing you all God's blessings and wishing you a long, healthy, happy, and cancer-free life. God bless you. God be with you. Peace.